You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. I'm Matt Adams alongside Mike Chappell today. Dave Griffiths taking a vacation on us this week, Mike.
Did you get an invitation? I didn't.
I didn't get an invitation, and while I'm not his direct manager, I did not get a vacation approval request either.
Just total disrespect. At least to say, what do you guys think? Or at the very least, I'm going. Deal with it. But none of that.
Yeah, or at least promise to bring us back something. Get us something out
we'll
of
get
this,
a
right?
Mickey, we'll get a Mickey and a Minnie t-shirt on the way home if that's where they went.
All right, so we are going to talk Indianapolis Colts football, of course, today. We're going to talk the local pro day that the Colts held this week. I think that was Monday. We'll talk about Carson Steele, the former Center Grove running back. Julian Blackman officially re-signing with the Colts. A little bit of an update on Anthony Richardson and his rehab, thanks to both a video that I saw posted on social media and also a story from ESPN.com's Stephen Holder. And then a little bit, we'll look into the mock draft outlook, just kind of a general overview of where things are. But let's start, Mike, with the Colts Pro Day. We had, 58 players invited. All of them had some sort of local tie, whether they played for a state school or they were, you know, a former high school player here in the area or whatnot.
I don't know what the rules are, but it's within a certain amount of radius from their school. Like, this was like an Illinois Pro Day, Illinois, IU, Purdue, Ball State. And then if we look at the list, that's like Southern Illinois, it's Southern Mississippi, and these are local kids.
Mm-hmm. I saw a Wabash
kid from Marion was there, Marion University. I focused on Carson Steele, the running back, who – if you're a movie buff, he looks like Thor. He really does. And he's a big kid. He's like listed 6'1", 225. Center Grove, Mr. Football back in 2020, led Center Grove to the state championship and went to Ball State for 2 years. And the second year, he was 1,600 yards, led the MAC, ninth in the nation. Then he went to UCLA, wanted to play with the bigger guys, I guess, bigger programs and all that. And he was their leading rusher. 800 and some yards. So the pro days where you, again, it gives the Colts a really good chance to hone in and get final evaluations. They've done their work for months on this, and this gives you the chance to talk with the kids and see them work out, and, you know, with eyeballs after you've already done, they've already seen a lot of these guys at the pro days and all this. So it's a great opportunity. And we were talking before the air, the Colts do this. Well, several years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, they had a tryout day, you know, because you hear people say, oh, I could play football, I could do that. So they basically opened the doors and said, now, you had to have some, you know, competency, I think. Although, because there was one guy, he was 30-ish, and he was like a construction worker, and he took the week off because he wanted to come here to see if he could be like an offensive lineman, defensive lineman. And it was his dream. And then they had some kid, a quarterback, and he couldn't play. He simply couldn't play. Kevin Bowen and I were sitting there laughing at him, behind his back, obviously. But they had to take him out of drills because they couldn't evaluate tight ends and receivers because he couldn't throw the ball. But it was kind of a thing to say, hey, maybe you'll find that one guy who can. But it's more to say, so you think you can play, huh? Well, here, I'll show you that you can't. But it was a good gesture. But the things that we've gone through over the years, a tryout day where you see guys who think they can play and maybe they could back when in high school or early college, but no longer can.
And this is one of those things where the Colts Pro Day this week was not that, because these were all invitees, people that the team had some interest in or what have you. So, and I mean, like you said, you're kind of looking for a diamond in the rough, somebody who may be able to contribute to the team, whether it's special teams or give you some line depth or just take a flyer on a guy. And last year's attendees included Aiden O'Connell, who got drafted. You had Tyler Adams, who was a wide receiver from Butler. He didn't quite catch on with the Colts, but he almost did when they had a need at wide receiver. Payne Durham, the tight end from Purdue, drafted by Tampa. And then Juju Brents, and I'm sure Juju was already on the Colts' radar and everything. And it's not like
he didn't participate because of the
he had wrist surgery.
Had wrist surgery.
Yeah, but he was there. And then Michael Tutsi also, who is been on and off the Colts roster and has a reserve future contract with the team. So, again, not necessarily guys that are going to be your frontline players. Well, Juju is, but most of these are going to be guys maybe fill out some rosters, give a shot, give a guy a shot, see what he's got. Maybe you find something there that you didn't know you had before.
Or like we were talking, it's about getting your foot in the door and getting a name recognition along with talent. But let's say that Chris Ballard and his personnel staff are aligning their, once the season's are aligning receivers, 20 deep, whatever, because you never know if you get a rash of injuries at that spot. Well, you go to your board and say, who's out there? Not only who's out there, but who do we know about that's out there? So that it's value. And I saw a clip that the Colts put out of Shane Steichen and then Chris Ballard talking to these guys after we were there. On Monday, it was about 2 hours, and you see them, all the players circle around the coach and the GM, and they're telling these guys, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you're going to be a draft pick. Maybe you're going to be undrafted. Maybe you'll get a tryout for a mini camp. But it's all about doing what you can. This is that latest audition. The combine is the all-time audition. That's when, you know, the CEO's there, and you got to make a good impression. But this is – it's not as important, but it's important because, again, it gives – you're being watched by Chris Ballard and Shane Steichen. Reggie Wayne's out there working with the receivers, Cato June with the linebackers. And so it's really important for these guys to get out there and play well, yes, but just give the a team another reason to put you on their board. Again, whether it's a draft pick, whether it's an undrafted guy, or whether it's a guy that – you know, if something happens at a position, they know that I can come in and at least hold my own for a while.
And Carson Steele's an interesting story because, you know, for a lot of these guys, maybe not getting invites to that scouting combine, and that makes this extra valuable.
Which he didn't, because I'm thinking it's because he had a hernia surgery, which I'm thinking maybe that played into it. But yeah, there's no question. There've been times. It's been several years ago with the combine. I worked with. When I was at the Star with Ralph Reef with St. Vincent Sports Medicine, and they pre-trained these guys for the combine. They did pre-combine. They may have been one of the first to do it, where they put these guys through all these are the drills you're going to see, and so they put these guys through it. And guys who didn't get, you know, invitations to the combine, that week, they would, two or three of these guys would, I think Joe Wrights was one of them, where they had a private workout at St. Vincent's, and teams show up. Baltimore Ravens, they show up for these private workouts because teams, they have so many scouts, so many, you know, personnel guys, and if you can play, it's 99% sure they will find you. They'll know who you are, where you are, what you can do. So any chance to get in front of teams and scouts and GMs and head coaches, you take advantage of it.
And Steele strikes me as a guy who will run through a brick wall and he probably can.
Literally, I think he really could.
Yeah. To try to get himself a sniff in the NFL.
It's about getting your foot in the door. Think of all the undrafted, and I always have a couple that come to my mind, a couple of these undrafted guys who have made a mark with the Colts. You know, Dominic Rhodes. You know, when Edgerrin James went down, Dominic Rhodes took over and was a pretty good player for several years. Gary Brackett, undrafted. And he was a cornerstone of the 2000s defense. So it's get your foot in the door, and then it's up to you. Once you get your foot in the door, it's up to you. But that's what with Carson Steele, he said they look at me as a bigger back, maybe block, catch the ball out of the backfield, special teams. So if a team in round six and round seven, probably round seven, or even the undrafted, probably more the undrafted guys. Which might be what he is facing. I don't know. But I would think someone like Carson Steele, and every team and every market has these guys. The local guy who had a hell of a career, and he's not quite draftable. But those are the guys you sign after the draft. The roster goes to, you know, it's 90. It's 90. So, you know, you get a guy like that in camp, And then he makes it difficult for you. Because once you get in camp, the thing is to give him a reason not to cut you.
Right.
Keep me. This is why you should keep me. And there will be four or five or six players kept because of special teams. Now, you got to be able to play corner or linebacker or running back, but special teams is super important, and it may be more important now with the new rule changes.
And if you can just get into camp, because I know the big concern with Steele's probably straight line speed. He's listed as a fullback, the Colts on that invite list. He was listed as a fullback. So his 40 time, not great, but if you can just get into camp, sometimes that stuff disappears, because when you're talking about game speed, is sometimes it's so much different from just being able to run fast.
And one thing that'll work against him probably in the draft, I think his RAS score was a 7.5. It was kind of low. I mean, when you're thinking about the top things, but no, it's some players. Whatever the raw numbers are, that doesn't it's not the same when you get on the field. You play quicker, and you're better reaction. So we'll see. You just hope someone like him, or like these other guys, at least get a chance to show what they can do.
Yeah, good luck to Carson Steele and all the guys there at the Pro Day. Now we'll talk about somebody who we know will be on the Colts roster next year, and that is Julian Blackmon. We'd heard last week that he was going to re-sign with the team. It officially happened this week on Tuesday, inking a one-year deal with the Colts. Solves one of their problems at safety, but also we still would like to probably have some extra experience there in the backfield. In the secondary, but good to have Blackmon back, and he spoke to the media this week.
Yeah, the Colts benefited from a lukewarm safety market by getting him back at, I think it's a 1 year, maximum $7 million guaranteed. I think it's three and change, or the change is like $200,000.
That is what I read in your article.
Yes.
Around there.
So good change. But I'd like to see them really double down on the lukewarm market by signing another veteran safety. We've mentioned there's still three or four of them that are really, really good guys that are not going to get the massive contracts. The big contracts, by and large, are done. I saw Josh Allen, the non-quarterback Josh Allen, just got a monster contract extension from Jackson, but that's different. Free agents, I really think free agents have gotten the money they're going to get. So you could get you a veteran safety. Jamal Adams, I don't know. But the Justin Simmons, guys like that, maybe, you know, 1 year, $6 million. I would do that. And then I'm pretty well set at safety. And then Nick Cross is your third guy. Rodney Thomas is your fourth guy. So, but it does address that one area, because I don't think they were going to – I really don't think they were going to draft a safety early with the idea that he could be a potential starter. So this does – you know, it certainly, I'd say, limit defections. There's virtually no defections, just one or two guys, Zach Moss and someone else.
Yeah, Gardner.
Gardner Minshew, right. So it, great signing. And talking to him, you know, I said, did the process frustrate? He said, well, not really, but then it was obvious that it did. Because he basically said he thought his value was more than a one-year contract, and I'm sure he was looking at 2 years, 3 years, and I don't know what the average is going to be, $10 million, I don't know. So, but he also agreed that failing a multi-year deal, that this is probably the best place for him. And we've talked about this. I mean, we talked that we thought he was going to be back. But if you can't get a multi-year deal from somebody, and you're going to have basically a one-year prove-it deal, why not go back to the place that you're going to start? You know the system. You're coming off your best year. So this will be, if he can stay on the field, this will be the best opportunity to have another, you know, to build on last year and then go into free agency next year when maybe the safety market is more robust.
And maybe it will be. You know, if you go to a different team and you have a different system and you don't necessarily adjust or adapt.
It takes you a year.
You know, and then you're on your free agent contract and then you have – lost your value.
Well, they say, yeah, why did you have a down year? Well, I was in a new, they don't want to hear that.
Right.
So this is a perfect situation for him. I realize he's at some level disappointed because he wanted to see what was out there. And I think the Colts said, well, yeah, go ahead. And it was a gamble. Normally when guys leave, the last guy that I can remember that went out there to see what they could get and it just didn't work and came back was another safety, Clayton Gathers. And it worked out pretty well that he came back here. So we'll see. And he's 25. He's 25 years old. So, you know, and yes, there's an injury history, I guess, an ACL at Utah is last year. And then he had the Achilles in year two, I think, here. Last year, the last two games with a shoulder injury, which I don't believe was serious. It just came at the end of the season when it took him too long to get – it would have taken him too long to get back. He said he's 100%. So this is a good signing. This was one of the more important signings if we want to rank all these guys. He was, to me, a top three signing that they needed because of his age, his ability, and the position.
And it is kind of interesting that the safety market is a bit depressed. I mean – he's 25 years old, and yeah, he banged up his shoulder at the end of last year, and I know he's got the two other major injuries, but it just kind of shows you how that all works together with these veteran safeties being cut. It depresses the market, and so
life is about timing.
A guy that's off a career year can't get, and I know that, you know, he's probably wanted a bigger deal than what he got with the Colts, and that's why he's back with the team, because he wasn't getting that from anybody else, even though he had visits with at least a couple of
franchises. He visited Buffalo and Frisco.
Yeah, those are the two that I can recall. And then I know that I listened to some of his, you know, comments that he made afterwards, and it sounds like it's, I don't know, necessarily a goal, if you want to call it that, but he really wants to be able to play 17 games next year, show that he will be durable enough.
What, he played 15 last year? Yes. I think he played 16 the year before, yeah. Which means he's missed 3 games in 2 years.
So he's not had a full season
right.
yet in the league.
But maybe this will be like Michael Penix. He has history issues also, but the last 2 or 3 years he hasn't.
Right.
The injuries were at IU. So, but it's the unfortunate and cruel truth in the NFL is once you get a reputation, man, it sticks with you.
It sticks with you. And I think it probably played a factor in Blackmon.
It could very well have.
You know, you don't know if he hadn't banged up his shoulder, would the Colts have been more willing for a multi-year deal? Or would somebody else have been willing to maybe pay him a little bit more to bring him there for a couple years?
Or again, with the Colts the way they are, did they sort of have their value on him, realizing that he's probably not going to get a big number out there? And he said, okay, this could very well be what they offered him.
That could be the same offer
back in March.
Him. Yeah, absolutely.
And he came back, and they certainly didn't lowball him. It's a good, you know, you get $3 million guaranteed, and you can max it at $7 million. It's not what, you know, certainly he wanted. It's not what maybe in other years he would have gotten. But, you know, they signed a lot of guys for the 1 year, $1 million. They certainly value him a lot more. That's one thing. They, as we've seen, and as it riles up the fan base, they will reward their own. Maybe do a fault. I don't know. We could spend the whole program talking about that. But they signed. Remember, they signed Zaire Franklin to that. Was it a 2 year, 3 year, $10 million contract?
The special team standout contract.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And he realized that. And they realized that he outplayed it. And I was told, you know, they said we simply can't keep looking him in the face and having him play on that special teams contract. So that then he got 3 years, 30-some million, 39, I don't know what it was, 30-some million. So they will take care of their own. And this is a guy who could very well be one of their own if you value safety enough in your priority list with your personnel. So play well, and most of the time you will be rewarded by this franchise.
Would still like to see them add a veteran, another veteran back there. I just think it would be good with what we saw from the unit last year.
Well, somebody's going to get hurt.
Absolutely,
you know,
yes.
They get hurt, you're going to need your third or fourth safety to play.
Yeah, so you'll need it for depth. Some experience would be good back there, too. So we'll see if they do anything. You know, they've still got a couple months to work on some stuff. And then we got the draft coming up, too. I don't know that safety will necessarily be a focus, but you never know.
I'd be surprised.
I mean,
they've got 7 picks, although they'll come out of this with, what, 9?
Yeah, probably.
Because they can't help themselves. Well, he can't help himself.
We'll talk about draft a little bit later, but just on that note, in 7 drafts, Chris Ballard has made 18 draft day trades.
He loves them picks.
Loves them picks.
It's funny how sometimes when a GM will, he'll give you that soundbite, and it could be on his – and it's funny, he told us how he always talked about roster building, about how offensive line, defensive line, and he sort of said one time, it'll be on my headstone. He drafted offensive linemen and defensive linemen, or he made that a priority. So that's why I don't think, and we're kind of going down a little rabbit hole here, but that's why people shouldn't be super surprised with how this offseason's gone. Julian Blackmon is like the 11th of 15 or 11th of 14 of their own free agents that have re-signed with this team.
Isaiah McKenzie was another one.
So McKenzie, Minshew, and Zach Moss. There was one more, and I can't think of who it was. But this has been a strange year, even for Ballard. The volume, the number of players, you know, three or four of them got league minimum, but the rest of them got good money. So it was a we were talking again at the out of the Colts complex for the pro day is how close they came to getting Daniel Hunter. And would the perception of their offseason, how would it have changed had they signed Daniel Hunter, the big guy for two years, $50 million, whatever it would have been, but not re-signed maybe Blackman, maybe Grover Stewart.
Grover's probably gone.
Pick two names. Probably it would have been. Yeah. It would have taken two names. You still would have done Pittman. You still would have had to do Zaire. Tyquan Lewis. I don't know, but had they signed Daniel Hunter, two guys wouldn't be here probably. Would that have satisfied people? I don't know. But it's funny how when a guy tells you almost implicitly, this is how we're going to do things, and then he does it, and you seem surprised. You know, next year, and I always think that next year plays a role in what they do this year, because you've got to look ahead. DeForest Buckner is going to be up next year. Everything that they've done tells me they're going to re-sign Buck because he's going to be 31. I've not seen an iota of slippage.
Yeah, no drop-off I've seen.
Well, if you watch the defensive tackle market, it's, what, $22, $23 million? And then if Bernhard Raimann has another good year, you got to play your left tackle. And that's, I don't know, $15, $16 million. So it's intertwined. But I guess fortunately for the fan base, there's no other Colt to re-sign. So they're done there. I don't know who else they could even think about re-signing, bringing back. So, but Blackman was good. They got him for probably their price, and at the position that they had to bring somebody in. As we said, I would still go out and get another veteran safety because you let the market settle down and you bring in a pretty good player at your price.
And we move from the defensive side to the offensive side. And I saw a video this week posted by, it was Cortex Sports Performance, which is where Anthony Richardson is doing his rehab. And they kind of had this video segmented for day one of his rehab. And it's just little soft tosses.
Into a net.
Then week eight. And here's airing it out, throwing some zip on the ball.
He's throwing 30, 40 yards with zip on it.
And so Stephen Holder, ESPN.com, Stephen Holder, did go and follow AR to some of his rehab and had a pretty nice article about, you know, how he's doing in his rehab and what it's taken to do it, and also sort of teach himself to slow it down just a little bit. He wants to run through that wall, but he's kind of learning some life perspective. I want to have a long career. You know, I've got a child now, and I need to make sure that everything gets taken care of.
And I'm sure, again, the Colts open their offseason work Monday, I believe it is. The first couple of weeks are just it's strength conditioning and rehab. But they can, you know, quarterbacks can get out on the field and throw it around. You just can't have any kind of structure at all. They're going to have to hold him back. They just are. And that's fine because he doesn't need to be ready April 15th. He needs to be ready, like, in June for OTAs. That's when you're end of May, I guess. So, but they're not going to push him. He doesn't really need to be ready until training camp, but I'll change it. He needs to be ready for OTAs, to where he takes most of the reps, because he probably had zero. He probably had zero practices with Jonathan Taylor, maybe one or two that the game. What was the Tennessee game? The fifth week of the season, maybe a few that week, but no off-season workout, no training camp. You know, and Taylor's missed the first month or so. So, and then Michael Pittman, every rep they get will be invaluable with the skill people, Pittman, Pierce, Josh Downs, all these guys. So, everything that you've seen is incredibly encouraged. There shouldn't be any, well, you know, he might be ready for your OTAs. No, he's going to be ready for your OTAs. It'll be how much. And Shane Steichen told the guys at the owners' meetings that they're going to monitor and they have to. This is the long-term view you have to take. But at the same time, he needs to do more than just, you know, minor stuff during the off-season workouts because this is going to be your guy.
And he's been back and forth. He's been in Indy a little bit. He's been down in Florida as well. And I'm not exactly sure what the timeline is. In the article, it's not necessarily clear, but he came to Indianapolis to kind of for a progress report, more or less, and threw in front of the staff. And, you know, they were just kind of – Ballard was almost like, I can't even believe this kid was injured.
Right.
You know, because
right.
he apparently has gotten that zip back on the ball.
And that's what that latest video showed you at the end of it. He was – chucking up pretty good. And Steven, one of the good points Steven had in his story, I think it was then in Jacksonville after the owners meetings, and it was really a good get by Steven. But he pointed out how at the end of a couple of the workouts is, okay, you're going to throw this pattern three times or whatever. And it wasn't quite to where Richardson wanted to be as far as precise, and he kept wanting to do more and more and more. Finally, they basically took the football away from him.
Yeah, because he's on a pitch count, but he's right. going past the pitch count right. because he wants to get it right. He wants to get on that good hit.
The pitch count was 20, but you're at 24. I'll do two more. No, you're already four over your pitch count. So that's a good thing. It's a good thing that they're going to have to that during his rehab. Now they have to hold him back because if you let a player go out there, he'll just destroy his rehab.
Absolutely. But
he will. I feel pretty good today. Well, you're supposed to, but then tomorrow you may not feel that good. Well, and I think there's some belief that if you don't feel good, well, you're supposed to fight through it. Well, maybe your body's telling you that it's not quite ready to take that step. Everything that I've seen and read when we talked to Richardson back in January is he's not on schedule. He's ahead of schedule. And, again, the only schedule that matters is to be ready at some level next week and then really be ready to go in May. And I think he will be.
And then also Holder went – or Stephen Holder went with him to his kind of his workout session. Not the throwing rehab, but the workout stuff. They have him doing some unique things with a medicine ball for strength training. And then doing a lot of flexibility and range of motion stuff as well, as in addition to probably some standard weightlifting.
We saw the range of motion, and was it the
Was it Florida? The Florida game.
The Florida game at the first two round games here, and he's windmilling pretty good. So everything. This isn't like a former quarterback here where the progress reports as well. Is he throwing Nerf balls yet? Is he throwing a regulation football yet? So to me, every sign is positive. Whether we talk to AR next week, I don't know. That's being discussed. Whether we get him next week, the first day we get players, I think on Tuesday, I think it is. Whether we get AR that day or whether it's a week or two later, I don't know. But everyone should be encouraged. You know, we're not talking about it. Is he going to be the guy? Is he going to do what CJ Stroud did? No, we're just saying that this guy's back should be back to where he can do what he does. And again, I think we saw enough last year in the small sample size that he looks like he could be the guy. But if he's back healthy, then he has a chance to be that guy.
And I know that a lot of fans, if you read message boards and Twitter/X or what have you, fans not real happy with the Colts offseason, a lot of them, you know, just kind of bringing back the same guys. This is a team that went 9-8. They missed the playoffs. You know, we're just going to get the band back together and essentially put the same team on out there. And I understand that. There were some quality free agents out there, and L'Jarius Sneed would have been a nice trade, I think, for to help with that cornerback. Danielle Hunter would have been good off the edge, and so I understand these things as well. But they kept a lot of really good players, I felt like. And then the thing that's really exciting is if, and it's a big if, but if Richardson is able to perform at the level that he was last year in that little glimpse that we saw, he's going to be a dynamic player in the NFL, and people need to try to keep that in mind in the back of their heads. That basically, last year was a flyer that they took on him. It looks like it's going to pay off. We do need to see the results on the field, obviously.
And there's no doubt in my mind from having talked to Ballard and Steichen and just how they've addressed it. They haven't said it flat out, but they're putting so much on, if you want to call it running the guys back out there, that having Richardson back will make that type of a difference. They talk about explosive plays. That's what he brings. He just does, whether it's throwing, whether it's running. What do you have, four rushing touchdowns last year in four starts? So what might he have done in a longer – and then keep in mind, it's Richardson and it's Jonathan Taylor. your two best offensive players, you know, with all due respects to Quentin Nelson and Pittman, these are the two guys that have got the great players, the Jordans and LeBrons. They make everyone around them better. And that's what you're expecting from Richardson. Which, again, there's something of a leap of faith there. There really is, mm-hmm. because
yeah, there's belief. You've got to have belief.
173 snaps, you know, and with Taylor, you know, he played 11 games last year. I'd say he was probably JT for eight of them, with the prolonged ankle rehab
slash contract
in contract. So they played. I've been saying one play. They played together two plays. In the Tennessee game, there was the 1 3-yard rush, and then he was in there for pass protection, and he really did nothing. So they're really expecting Richardson to be that guy and provide the ups and downs, yes, because of the lack of game experience. But, you know, it's one of those, well, if Minshew took us here, where will this guy take us? I mean, there's no and we're not here to trash Gardner Minshew.
We say that disclaimer almost
I feel obligated to. But again, if he can do this, what can this guy do? You know, again, 4th-and-2 against Houston, would AR have converted that? Oh, probably so. Now, you still would have had trouble with the secondary and all the stuff that they did, that Stroud did. And again, Taylor played probably at full strength 8 games. And when he was good, he was really good. So that changes the dynamics of an already pretty good offense where, what were they, 10th in scoring? Mm-hmm.
It still blows my mind that the Colts hung in there as a top 10 NFL scoring team based on what they had to deal with last year.
Right, and you're adding to that, expecting Pittman to get better. So there's everything's intertwined. Did that keep them from going heavier in free agency? Well, again, they made as almost as strong of a push as you can on Hunter without getting him. And I believe the $48 million guaranteed was a non-starter. They said, nah, that's a bridge too far. We'll give you, I don't know, 30. I can't believe they thought about a $48 million guarantee. So, they're either going to be right or not. And all that they've done, I don't care if they brought in Hunter and Snead and still found a way to bring everybody back. If the quarterback isn't the right guy, what do you got? You know, and that's not to discount Joe Flacco because going into the season right now, not if you didn't know what was going to happen last year, would you rather have Joe Flacco or Gardner Minshew? I'll take Flacco. You know, and for 5 weeks, he was everything they needed in Cleveland. And then it sort of came off. You know, I don't want to see Joe Flacco play 17 games. I really don't. But I think for a month, he'll be pretty good. So, so much of what everything is tied together. But at the core of this, I really believe, is they believe we're getting the quarterback back and we're getting JT back, and they're going to do just so much more. They keep, you know, and just go back to, was it 2021 when JT led the league in rushing? Yeah. He was, of course, then all that he did, they didn't make the playoffs, which shows you the value of a running back if the other pieces aren't there. But they really believe those two pieces are the main reasons they'll take that next step.
So there's plenty of reason for optimism, and we'll hopefully not have to have that optimism crushed at any time during training camp and preseason and all that. So hopefully everybody stays healthy and behaves themselves. We do have a little event called the NFL Draft coming up in a couple of weeks, Mike.
2 weeks tomorrow.
Yeah, April the 25th. That'll be in Detroit this year. The Colts currently have the 15th overall pick in the draft.
That should be a prop bet on whether they stay at 15 or they're not going to go up. That's not going to happen. But go back 4 or 5 spots, maybe.
Now, Colts.com, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Is it?
It's JJ.
JJ Stankovitz or yep. Stankovitz. Does this thing on every Monday, Mock Draft Monday, and he goes and he scours, basically does our homework for us. So big thanks to him on that. Goes and scours some of the different mock drafts and the experts and what they're saying about the Colts. This week on Monday, he tracked 19 different mock drafts. And so I just had a few little takeaways from this. 6 of the 19 have the Colts taking an offensive player. 13 of the 19 have them going defense. Your top names, Quinion Mitchell, not Quentin, as I have mistyped here. It is Quinion Mitchell out of Toledo. Brock Bowers, Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU, are each in three different mock drafts. I believe Terrion Arnold's cornerback from Alabama is in a couple. And then Cooper DeJean from Iowa is in a couple as well. 19 of the mock drafts have the Colts taking a cornerback. That is obviously people looking at the Colts roster based on
10 of the 19.
Yep, 10 of the 19.
Right.
Have the Colts taking a cornerback, and that's obviously based on people looking from the outside in, looking to the Colts, seeing that their secondary wasn't good this year. They don't really have much experience at cornerback, and so to mitigate that problem at cornerback, they need to take a cornerback.
If they take a cornerback at 15, he's a starter.
Absolutely, he'd have to be. 100%.
Well, they took Juju in the second round last year, and he was going
and
to be a starter.
He was going to be a starter, and, right. and just injury stuff kind of right. Derailed his ability to get some playing time for the Colts. Of those cornerback options, I did note that Cooper DeJean and Quinion Mitchell had the highest relative athletic scores for their position with virtually tied. The interesting thing is they are both under 6'1". Most of the cornerbacks that they have, that the mock draft folks have the Colts taking, are not quite the Chris Ballard type, the long-armed, big corners that we typically
Juju.
See. That we, of course, Juju's got like 34-inch arm span. It's amazing. So some of these guys are a little bit smaller. But, you know, he also, he being Ballard, also values athleticism. So if you're looking pure athleticism, then Cooper DeJean and Quinion Mitchell seem to be kind of your where you would kind of go toward.
And again, I see all these. One I thought was crazy. I don't remember the guy's name. And I would if I remembered, I wouldn't mention it. Had him taken a defensive tackle, the kid from Texas.
Yes.
Is
yep.
it Murphy?
Byron Murphy. Yep.
They just signed Grover Stewart, $30 million. They re-signed Tyquan Lewis at $12 million. They're going to probably re-sign Buck. So that's one position I just – as much as Ballard believes you can't have too many, that would be a bridge too far for me. I would still – and this is I've always – my disclaimer, I would be an awful GM because I would ignore the best player and not go to where I think I really need it. And I would, although in this draft you wouldn't have to force it, I like receiver at 15 because I want to give the quarterback every opportunity to succeed. And right now, to me, they've got two proven receivers with Pitt and Downs. Pierce, you think, but you don't know. And I would think a receiver and three or four of these guys have great outside speed. Who was it? Brian Thomas. Did he lead the college football with 17 touchdowns? I think it was, or whatever.
That sounds right, but don't quote me.
I know. So, but I understand that what they probably and what smart people would do, which means that I'm not a smart person, is take a corner at 15 and find a pretty good receiver at 46 or whatever they are. Maybe if you're at 46 and you see a guy there. You do like you did with Jonathan Taylor. You move up three or four spots in the second round. But to me, they've got to come out of the first two rounds with a passing option. If Brock Bowers falls to him at 15, you take him. You just take him. But you've got to come out of here with a starting corner and a receiver who can catch who can make a difference in his first year.
And a lot of people say Bowers is as good as a wide receiver as you're going to get in the draft. I mean, he's not going to have wide receiver speed, but it's pretty close. And he's capable of pretty much doing anything that you want him to do out on the field. Interestingly, a couple of the drafts had the Colts trading up with Denver to get Bowers.
I don't know. I think Bowers could make that much of a difference because I'm old enough to remember Dallas Clark. And that team in the 2000s was much more loaded offensively mm-hmm. to where
yeah.
Clark probably was the missing piece. I don't know that Bowers is the missing piece. You still have some deficiencies, but boy, how many times have we seen what that player, you know, is it, I'll blow his name, Pakua, the Rams guy,
Puka Nacua.
From the Rams, yeah. Nacua. I'll have to do spell it, not pronounce it. But they just create problems. Mark Andrews. Yes, Kelsey and Kittle and all those guys. But what those guys can do, and we saw the Colts have problems with those guys. So, to me, you'll have to move up to get even. And what's the cost of moving up? Probably more than Ballard wants to pay. It's one thing to move up from whatever they were in Jonathan Taylor's year to go four or five spots to 44 in round two, as to move up three or four spots in round one. That gets prohibitive.
Now, we'll talk about this probably once we get closer to the draft, which in our next podcast. But I did look at Ballard's seven drafts that he's had with the Colts, and he's gone offense in four of them first, and then defense in three of them. All of them good players. Malik Hooker, Quentin Nelson, Rock Ya-Sin, Michael Pittman Jr., Kwity Paye, Alec Pierce, Anthony Richardson, obviously. Those last couple are recent selections, so they're still on the team. Malik Hooker just didn't work out for the Colts from an injury perspective, and then they traded Rock Ya-Sin.
So, and they were good players. Right. Again, I think they've had trouble finding edge pass rushers because they've
with Ben Banigou, Kimiko Ture, and some other guys.
But by and large, I think he's had a good draft history. They missed on some early corners. Quincy Wilson comes to mind. That's why, again, the draft. I think if a team is smart, what you try to do is you know what your priorities are going into the offseason. You just you meet with your people and you say, okay, this is where we are. Where do the coaches and coordinators, where do you believe we are, you know, strengths, weaknesses? And if you're allowed, address the first step is free agency. You know, resign your own, yes. Don't create holes where there wasn't one. But then try to address things in free agency, which the Colts did not do.
Nope.
And then the draft is sort of the final thing to where you can say, okay, we didn't get this. We've got to get this. So, but they'll come out of here with two or three good players. And they've been pretty good about finding guys late in the draft as well. Zaire Franklin. I mean, he's my new Gary Brackett. You know, Brackett wasn't drafted, but here's Zaire was, as I always stress, he wasn't just a seventh-round linebacker for the Colts. He was their second seventh-round draft pick that year. Remember Matt Adams?
Yeah, I do remember Matt Adams.
So, and again, it's kind of where we started about getting your foot in the door. Get into a camp and then work your way up. And there's not one or two stories. There's bunches of stories of guys who outplayed being an undrafted guy, who outplayed being a seventh-round draft pick. We always have the Tom Brady, Brock Purdy. You know, get your foot in the door and do something. But if you can play, they're not going to cut good players. Now, first and second round draft picks are going to have a longer leash.
Yeah, they'll have some grace period on
right,
them.
But third on down, if you can't play, you can't play. And if somebody deserves to be kept over that guy, that's what they'll do.
I mean, we saw that with Darius Rush. They decided they liked Jalen
Jones.
Did they
cut him the week after he had his pick six?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, he had a really impressive preseason game and then gone.
Because they don't look at those as much as they do training camp, off-season workouts, practices,
right.
And that's what you make your decisions on.
They have a lot more information to work from than those of us who just kind of
than our eye test on right. Saturday or Sunday in a preseason game.
Yeah, and we're like, oh yeah, that guy is fast. We should keep him.
See ya.
Yeah, you know. So, you mentioned Zaire Franklin. He was acquired when the Colts traded Henry Anderson to the Jets. That got them that pick. They turned that pick into Zaire Franklin. They did that again in 2020. They traded Quincy Wilson to the Jets, and they got Isaiah Rodgers out of that pick. Now, again, Rodgers didn't work out for the Colts, not because of anything that happened on the field, but because of what happened off the field to him. But, like, good move. It worked out.
Right.
And generally speaking, I know the Colts don't play the game in free agency the way that a lot of people would like them to and get splashy names and all that stuff. When it comes to draft day stuff, Chris Ballard is about as savvy as they get. They get more picks. They don't hit on everybody, and nobody hits
everybody. The more picks you have,
the greater chance.
If you're going to hit 40%, I'd rather have 40% of 10 picks and 40% of, you know, six or seven picks.
I mean, look at the trade they made with the Jets for the third overall pick back in 2018. The Colts had the third pick. They traded down with the Jets. They got three second-round picks out of that trade. They end up getting Quentin Nelson at sixth. He's been a franchise cornerstone. Also, Braden Smith, taken with that year's second-round pick. He turned another second-round pick in another trade down into Turay and Jordan Wilkins. Now, Turay right. didn't work out.
Wilkins was a pretty good player.
Wilkins was a pretty good player for the Colts. And Turay, you know, could have worked out. It didn't. And then they got another second-round pick in 2019 out of that deal that became Rock Ya-Sin.
I'd bring him back.
So, I mean, it's there are a lot of things like this. And then when Ballard has traded up, the players that he has traded up for, Tyquan Lewis, Kari Willis, Jonathan Taylor, and Nick Cross.
Right.
So, again, Nick Cross, a work in progress. Kari Willis retired early.
But none of those were in the first round.
And none of them were in the first round. And that's another important thing. So, yeah. When they do trade up, it tends to be in those third, fourth round, second rounds where they get a guy that they think they're kind of getting, you know, first or second round talent for, you know, X price or whatever.
What year was Willis?
Willis, you know, I didn't, 2019.
Okay, so right now he should be one of your starting safeties.
Right.
I mean, that's how you draft things, and he opted to go into missionary work. So, you know,
you can't know that.
So, but there've been misses. There've been misses. Again, the edge rushers jump out at me, but by and large, that's why I think people, but that's why I keep defaulting to, if Richardson is the right guy, this stuff should work. And if he's not the guy, and after a month of the season, he's just flailing away, which is not going to be the case. Same like in Tennessee. We've talked about in Tennessee. If Will Levis isn't the guy in Tennessee, they're dead for 6 years. You just are. So I like the moves. I would like to have seen another veteran free agent. I'd still like to see a – I wouldn't mind a veteran receiver. I wouldn't mind a veteran corner or safety. But they're not done yet. But it's just – it's hard nowadays with all of the glut of social media info. It's hard to be patient, but that's what, to some level, you have to be.
And in terms of patience, okay, 2019, Ballard traded the 26th overall pick to Washington. Then he traded down again, got another pick. Those picks ended up being Ben Bandigu and Marvell Tell. Okay, not great.
Not so good.
But the 2020 pick from that deal, Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah, it's funny how, because was it the year with Ben Bandigu where some of the receivers taken or some of the players taken after him were pretty good players?
Yeah, pretty good players.
So, and you can drive yourself crazy.
Absolutely.
With
every,
a second
every draft
guessing.
Is like that. There's
right.
some guy that we passed over and now he's a five-time Pro Bowler.
And I always say it's the extreme, but the Patriots passed on Tom Brady five times before taking him in round six.
Right, and every other team passed
right.
on him.
So if Tom Brady wanted to have a revenge tour, it would have started in Foxborough. But no, it's fun to do, and it does fuel the interest in the draft and what the NFL does. And you know, but I'll be glad when these 2 weeks are over, because again, you get overwhelmed by information. It's the old paralysis by analysis, and all of a sudden, people have J.J. McCarthy going fifth.
So suddenly he's the number one pick of the draft. He's not, but he has gone, he has skyrocketed up the draft.
And Drake May has kind of slid, and I still see, and I won't be shocked if six quarterbacks go before the Colts are on the clock.
And Colts fans, that is exactly
the only thing
that
would be better is if like seven, if Michael Penix
right.
works his way up there. So, but. Desperate teams do desperate things. That's why there's probably more misses on top 15 quarterbacks than there are hits, because you just don't know, and you're just afraid to pass on that guy who might be the next guy. Again, the Colts don't know about Richardson. The Titans don't know about
Will Levis.
And Carolina certainly doesn't know about Bryce Young.
No, how could they? How could they know anything
about
Bryce Young?
And if six quarterbacks go in the top 13, 14 picks, two of them aren't going to make it. History says three of them probably aren't going to make it. But you just can't be the team that passed on, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. That's the one position where teams will reach, it feels like, annually is quarterback, because of the contract flexibility that gives you, and the fact that if you do hit, then your franchise is probably set for a decade. But also very hard to do. for that to happen.
Well, that's what we go back to say, that the football god shined on Jim Irsay with Peyton Manning and mm-hmm. Andrew Luck. It had to be right time, right place. You know, things had to fall in place for Peyton, for them to be in a position to get Peyton. And similarly with Luck, that did. So, and then they sort of had to go through the rough period, almost like you're having to pay for what you got earlier. But if you get the guy, that guy gives you a chance. And without him, you're just everything is a struggle, and it's so hard to win without a quarterback who can carry the day for you.
And that's just kind of the great thing about the upcoming season from my perspective, is they don't have to go in and try to pencil in who's going to be our QB1.
Right.
And who's going to be QB1 next year.
Well, they didn't.
And the year after that.
They knew, but they didn't announce QB1 until August.
True.
Whatever that first week of August when, it's funny, I talked to Minshew and he said, yeah, I'm disappointed. Really? You thought you were coming here and it was a level playing field? But that's why I say it's important for Richardson to be out there when they really start cranking up like phase three of OTAs of the offseason. And then he's your guy. He needs the work. He needs to work with the rest of the team. All signs point to that.
All right. So first day of offseason work is Monday, April the 15th. That's also tax day and the WNBA draft. So just
or the Caitlin Clark day.
Caitlin Clark day for those of you who celebrate the Indiana Fever. They'll have offseason workouts May 21st to 23rd, May 29th to 31st. Mandatory mini camp for the Colts. June 4th through 6th, April the 25th to the 27th, the NFL draft again in Detroit. And we still haven't heard anything about this fifth-year option on Quiddy Pay, but as Mike often says...
Is it 13.4 million,
I think that's what we came to. And they still have to make their decision on whether or not they're going to pick up that fifth-year option on Quiddy Pay, and that decision has to be done by May the 2nd. So, you know, we won't know probably until we get there because, as Mike often says, deadlines spur action.
To me, there's no doubt that Ballard and his guys know what they're going to do. And unless if a defensive end falls to them, is there, would that impact what you do with Quiddy Pay?
They'll have time because the draft obviously happens before the deadline, so they can kind of figure out what they want to do there.
I just don't think $13 million is exorbitant for a top edge pass rusher. Although would you pay that for Jabal Sherrod early in his career? Probably. So that's still whether you draft a defensive end or not. I still think the price tag for Quiddy's fifth year is livable.
Yeah, I think so, and we'll just, like I said, we'll know in a couple of weeks. Well, that'll wrap up this edition of the Colts Blue Zone podcast for Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths, who, again, ditched us for vacation in Florida.
How you doing, Dave? I hope it's sunny and, you know, warm down there.
Hope you had a good time down there with his family.
Because it's wet and chilly up here.
Yeah, it's been not so wonderful here. But I'm Matt Adams, and that wraps up this edition of the Colts Blue Zone podcast.